Blog Talk Radio.
Return again, return again, return to the land of your soul. Return again, return again, return to the land of your soul.
Blessings and greetings, greetings and blessings, blessings those who are alive, because we want to stay alive. In Torah Chaim, instructions of life, Torah Chesed, instructions of kindness, Torah Rachem, instructions of mercies, you're tuned into Blog Talk Radio, and we humbly suggest and even assert, most boldly, with a higher inner frequency, we call ourselves Soul Class. This is Soul Class number 664, Conversations from the Tree of Life, Part 2. Blessed is our Creator, Baruch Hashem, Shalom, peace, and Baruch, a blessing upon the entire human family experience, 7 billion strong and growing. With Creator's help, our broadcast is now taking place live from 10:31 a.m. Jamaica time, corresponding to 11:31 a.m. live from Turtle Island, equals a.k.a. also known as the USA, Unified Soul Actualization, broadcasting even more specific form from Kesa Piskop, Crown Heights, Brooklyn, New York. Program content will focus on being in discussion with Sila Media prolific lecturer Jerome Sage Butler within a spiritual, cognitive, emotional realm coined under the Tree of Life. Butler is driven to tap into his deep ancestral wellsprings of deep divine source, correlating, relating, and developing dialogue with other human souls intended to guide human dialogue towards analyzing the moral and ethical nature we as human beings are well advised to explore. Program content will focus on jamming on the nature of male-female relation to our blessed earth. Butler talking about the agricultural status of the Diamond of the Caribbean, Jamaica, and how Rastafarian culture and Israeli scientists, in addition to medical practitioners, have subconsciously and maybe even consciously, morphologically, joined to promote the use of medical marijuana as well as as a cultural norm. Our call number will be 347-838-86969. Meanwhile, may the Eternal Creator bless and protect you and your loved ones. Please peacefully and pleasantly. You're listening to the Moshav Band. Hopefully one day, up the Hebrew month of Tishrei, we're going to interview one of these brothers because they're good friends with our good friend Joseph Israel. But in order to get on with the show, we have to turn on the music and welcome on our prolific lecturer, speaker of soul, spirit, and mind, Jerome Sage Butler. Good morning, Jerome.
Blessing. Good morning, Brother Dan. Good morning, Blog Talk Radio. Good morning from Kingston, Jamaica. Morning, Turtle Island, you know. Those out there in the Tri-State here all across, you know. The vocal tones, you know. And the internet, you know. Give thanks to those listening, you know. Bless up the Sister Nafatali. Give thanks to Sister Cindy, Brother Kyle, you know, and the whole family, Kajani and Zawadi. Give thanks for good souls, you know, listening in, sharing.
Beautiful. And let me wish my humble invocations and blessings and well greetings to the whole Sila Media family, because I know if they're promoting you and allowing you to manifest your wisdom, Jerome, we have to offer your friends and my friends as well. Just let them know that the Irie Vibes Goodman from Kessler Crown Heights is wishing them well for this day and for the days that come.
Thankful.
Jerome, before we go further, you know, I was talking to Jerome Sage Blessed Souls before the program that yesterday was a blessed day. I want to get a little cultural with everyone. It was the Day of Atonement. And the Day of Atonement is the recognition of 3,330 years ago, the mighty Levite prophet Moses came down after a second period of 40 days, and he had successfully attained atonement for the nation of Israel. And I want to point out that the Day of Atonement is specifically between human being and Creator, that if we go with contrition and yet with a spirit of joy, we can attain atonement. But when it comes to making amends to human beings, we don't go out to the Creator. We ask for the Creator's energy for us to do so. We make amends on a face-to-face, person-to-person, voice-to-voice, letter-to-letter, email, whatever it is. We cannot give up our responsibility or forego our responsibility to ask amends of each other by praying to Creator, like, Creator, may so-and-so forgive you. No, we must go to the person we might have hurt in some way and ask for their forgiveness. With that being said, too, before the program started, I was reflecting during the Yom Kippur service, and I shared this with Jerome, and then I'm look forward to his feedback on this. In chapter 97, verse 1, the very first verse of chapter 97, it reads out, "When the Creator will reign, the earth will exult, numerous islands will be glad." And the Yavetz HaDoresh, one of our Israelite sages, mentioned in the previous Psalm, chapter 96, "When he arrives to judge the earth, he will judge the world with righteousness and nations with his faithful truth. At that time, all will recognize that Creator reigns and that justice has returned to earth, and everyone will be glad." Now, particularly in terms of the end of this verse, "numerous islands will be glad." Even the most remote islands will hear of Creator's glory, and this is from the explanation of the Israelite sage Radak. "Small islands will have special reason to rejoice," hint, hint, Jamaica, "because they were defenseless against the larger nations, which made them into colonies and exploited their wealth. The Messiah will proclaim their independence, which will bring them joy," and that's an explanation by the Rashbam. Jerome Sage, I know that Jamaica was freed up in 1962, but I will not be surprised, and hopefully you won't be surprised, and all the members of that blessed diamond in the Caribbean called Jamaica will realize, you haven't seen anything yet when it comes to freedom. Messiah, the Lion of Judah, shall free up that diamond in the Caribbean, Jamaica. Any thoughts, comments, or questions or concerns about these matters?
Well, thank you. Thank you very much, Brother Dan. I'm listening to you. I'm just transfixed at the information, at the word. And first, the Day of Atonement, it seems a mighty divine paradigm, right? Because the truth is, I mean, when Moses came down, as you said, the second time from the mountain after a second 40-day stint, he had with him, you know, the holy tablets, you know, the law inscribed, you know. He had a directive from God, but the people had moved so far away. So that sacred moment of connection between man and God to seek absolution, you know, like the Christ crucified,
mm-hmm.
to crucify or... was to crucify our prejudices, you know, to conquer our fears, is still on in earnest today. And in the acknowledgement that there should be some human-to-human forgiveness, some human-to-human reciprocity because of the disharmony. And to see, as we grow in our godly nature, it is manifesting more. The islands rejoicing to the power of the Messiah. Through Rastafari, Jamaica remembered, or some segments of Jamaica got to remember that we are part of the holy ancient Israelite nation, Hebrew Israelites, right?
Right.
We began to see that our connections were biblical, that our connections were more than just sociopolitical and economic according to chattel slavery and European domination. There was a longer ethos to our nation. There was a stronger call, a stronger binding cord amongst us. Rastafari, through Haile Selassie, awoke a lot of that. And Rastafari is such a dynamic grouping of spiritual beings that even through Rastafari, Christians in Jamaica found more clarity in their perception.
Baruch Hashem, thank God.
The Jews in Jamaica found a clearer understanding. Or should I say, the European Jews, the Ashkenazi and the Sephardi, have gotten to understand the Ashanti, which is one of the African Jews. There are several African Jews in Jamaica, right? Just as there are several Arabs in Jamaica, African Arabs in Jamaica.
Uh-huh.
Arab just means black, right? The ancient land, even ancient Jerusalem, is ancient Africa. It sits on the African plate, tectonic plate. It's Africa. You know, I'm a man of the soul. My ancestors tell me of time when they were there. It reverberates more than just with the new political movement. But we do understand displacement of people. That's why we Jamaicans here on this little island, 144 square mile by 95 as it's told to us, we have a history accordingly that has been a history of displacement, but a pride developed from our amalgamation of our many differences. This is a metaphor for the world. Out of many one people is our motto, and rather we say out of one people, many people. This is a calling card to the nations to understand that we are a microcosm of the macrocosm. We understand what social, religious, and political prejudices do to suppress a people or to empower a people. We can see how it affects the whole environment. Our music reverberates with it.
Right.
So in Yom Kippur, in our Day of Atonement, within the context of being outside of maybe being unto the Gentiles, maybe being unto all the scattered nation, it is a sacred act. It's a sovereign act of reclamation between God and man. And I salute those who keep forward, you know. My beloved, she observes the day, you know, my princess, she observes the Day of Atonement. So
mm-hmm.
I see that it is something that is new in my perception, but I'm learning, Brother Dan. And so listening to you, I realize that there's so much, you know, that the Jewish, the Christian-oriented, and the Rastafari should put together to understand our collective harmony as living beings.
Amen. I can tell you this, Jerome Sage, that in November of 2015, I had attended a conference at the United Nations. And I want to tell you, and I'm going to testify between yourself and myself and those listening around the world. We currently broadcast into 35 countries, those who have picked up on our program, and hopefully more in the future. We still haven't penetrated into Russia and China. I want to penetrate Russia and China too, man. Well, with that being said, when you...
The
whole world. That's right. When you look at the alignment of national flags at the United Nations, Jamaica and Israel are only separated by one flag, and it might be either Iraq or Ireland, probably Iraq, which we have a whole heap of history in Iraq too. My wife's family, up until 100 plus years ago, had been living in Iraq since the destruction of the first temple. So, you know, and when I look as... and I listen to how you express yourself and other Rastafarians express themselves in the 21st century. This is not 1961. This is not 1975, just like a new album from Bob Marley. That, and I look at my own customs and my own traditions. The most ancient traditions, which are in the form of sustainable life styles, are going to eventually have the victory. A comment on that.
Many trepidations. I mean, I think the modern constructions are, in terms of the psyche, you know, it's manifest in terms of people behavior. It will show somewhat of a connection to the vulnerability people are feeling. I mean, people are feeling a lot more, I guess, disempowered, right? And this disempowerment is coming to a lot of the traditional viewpoints we have held and how they have been modernized to satisfy maybe a more of a material outlook versus the spirit is a bit contrite and confused within man. And I think people are taking advantage of that. We need the ancient, we need the rabbinical, we need the postmodern that seeks to bring about a connection between the old and the new. It's almost like unto the Old and New Testament. I know sometimes my responses are abstract, but they come from a place of interpretation as well as observation. Just like unto the Old and the New Testament, if we view things in just the New Testament eyes, we lose part of the wholeness of our sight, of our experience. And likewise, if you look at it only in terms of the Old Testament, we lose part of our presence as well. So it's a combination between the Old and the New, finding correlation between different forms of application through psychology and the actuality in terms of maybe policies, religious edicts, in terms of even personal attitudes too. I mean, at Sila Media, in my network, at Trail Life, even just within my friends, right? That is something we seek. But first, we have to allow for someone to be themselves or for the understanding of themselves to be furnished by their experience. And likewise, it's allowing us to see ourselves better. Dialogue like this between yourself and I and the people in the different networks who are listening to the different faiths, the Orthodox faiths or, you know, the modern faiths, as
right.
opposed to modern views, it is a correlation. And the correlation is we're human. And you once told me, Brother Dan, that in Hebrew or in the ancient Hebrew, there isn't a word that denotes race as in ethnicity.
That's right.
But rather acknowledges the human family as just being different, you know, brothers of different, you know.
The families of the earth. All the families of the earth.
Giving strength to individuals, yet acknowledging our collective whole as a family. And that is where I think most of our arguments should be directed, because I think that's what will be of most benefit to us collectively. And I'm a person that I think I like to see the rabbi as the rabbi. I like to see the Rasta as the Rasta, the Christian man as a Christian, the Hindu woman as the Hindu woman, and the Muslim as the Muslim, and the Sikh as the Sikh. I think in the authenticity of what is truly genuine, it is not the forms that things take, really. It is the spirit, the soul, the ethics they hold that really shows that we are living the shared experience for harmony in spirit and in truth.
True. Beautiful. With that being said, thank you very much for your comment. With that being said, I'd like to go to our first topic. I mean, this is sort of like the appetizers to our discussion, and I think people have gotten a nice sample. The idea of understanding the nature of male and female as male and female paradigm, species, one soul, two bodies, relates to our blessed earth. So I'd like to go back to, of course, as I am prone to do, those who know me, and those who hopefully will come to know me, hopefully on a more substantial level via these humble efforts, is that there is a direct relationship between male and female in the very pronunciation of the Lashon HaKodesh, the Holy Tongue, the original language of the Bible, as King Selassie even acknowledged it, that meaning the Hebrew, that the word for man is Adam. We say in English, Adam. Now, the word for earth is Adama. Now, Adam is, Hebrew actually has a male and female context within the pronunciation of every word, meaning there's no, as far as I know, I haven't heard it yet, that there's no Hebrew word that is gender neutral. But actually, the Holy Tongue is to make us not transgender, but transcender, going beyond our own human, to elevate it. So when we say the original word, or we humbly share with blessed souls listening in, that the word for man is Adam, and the word for earth is Adama. So I understand all the cultural connotations and elucidations on how we call earth Mother Earth, because in the Hebrew pronunciation of the word for earth, it's actually in female. The ha sound, Adama, is female. So I feel no way when people talk about Mother Earth, because as you pronounce it in the original language, as we understand in the Bible, it is a female context, female form of the pronunciation of this word. Any take on that?
Bless, brother. Duly processing. It's awesome to hear true word, knowledge, information that can edify the soul. Adam, Adama, male and female, he created them. Both.
That's right.
The soul as one entity, the physical forms as dual entities in a singular context. Finding your right mate is finding the other half of your soul, is the wholeness of your being. Mother Earth, Father Time, life and nature willing, we are able to fulfill the progeny in us. In the electromagnetic spectrum, some say positive, some say negative, some say lighter, some say denser, some say hotter, some say colder. Both in tandem is a rhythm of progeny, perpetuity, continuity. Even in language, the Latin, and I'm sure also the Spanish, has male and female connotations to words like amiga, girl, amigo, boy, mi amigas.
Right.
You know, the girls, my girls, and mi amigos, my boys, my friends, right?
Mm-hmm.
It is in the innate way we relate in language that there is an acknowledgement of male and female. Separations, I think, distort the frequency, reduces the ability and the possibilities. If we remove the alignments, disempowerment ensues.
Drum surge? Okay, I thought I lost you for a second. Okay, could you go back on that thought? I lost you for about 3 seconds.
Yes, I'm saying if there's a separation in the alignment of the masculine and the feminine, then there's a loss in the alignment of the experience, because it creates a spiritual warfare, a battle between the sexes even.
Right.
This battle, when it rages, creates more damage because the energy field is distorted, the field of events is distorted, the experiences between male and female is distorted, and the children, the offsprings which are produced, are distorted. Hence, a wholly misaligned dichotomy. Male and female is more than a manifest reality. It is a spiritual fact. And as such, even in our behaviors, we have to not only be the denser, we must also be the lighter. We must not only be the aggressive, we must also be the subtle.
Mm-hmm.
Male and female are emotions. They are attitudes. They are behaviors, right? We have to maintain equilibrium. So I think when men feel over-aggressive without any notion of gentility, off balance. And when women are so soft, there is no assertion, there is no strength in them, there's no astringency in them, then they're out of balance. Because we are wholly masculine and feminine. The essence of our masculinity and our femininity is absorbed into our behaviors. That which is most predominant in us predominates. So the domination in the procreation process is that 8 days after conception, the flower, the lotus within the woman's womb, if it remains open, it's a girl, and if it closes up, it's a male.
Mm-hmm.
So the creation starts out as one, but in the manifestation, we see the duality. And that is how we get back to sensuality. It is experience and experiencer, right?
That's right.
So the male experiences himself through her, and she experiences herself through him.
That's right.
Any attempt to separate will only create a disempowerment, and the frequencies won't align. And what will happen is a self-denigration. It happens many different ways, right?
Right.
But if you leads to a whole imbalanced attitude. And I think when the feminine energy is more active, then we have a less tendency to be more violent and more to be more diplomatic as a language we use to represent a feminine activity. Though I think the masculine ego loves to postulate that he is diplomatic. But the emperor is truly diplomatic. He was crowned with his empress. And that day, and he had issues with the church because he had to fight the patriarchy to allow them to crown the empress with him. And he wanted it to be in the same ceremony, not on the same day. It has come to be defined as on the same day.
Beautiful.
Right?
Beautiful.
But he wanted it to be the same ceremony. So he's truly transcended, as the word you use to represent the harmony of our masculine and feminine nature. Within ourselves, within our behaviors, within our attitudes. It's a way of life.
Beautiful. I'd like to take the inverse one. You know, you were discussing when there's some sort of, so to speak, dysfunctionality between male and female paradigm, that I just want to reflect back that there's other words to describe human, and the two that are most interrelated between male and female is that male is called ish. And female is called Isha. Now, the root of the two words is Esh, fire. So this is the fire of the soul. Now, what distinguishes the man, like we're calling Ish, is that he has a yud or a yath sound, and the woman has the Isha. She has the hay sound, the ha sound, and we have a tradition that when male and female are living as one, not just brother and sister, but one soul with two bodies coming together as one flesh to produce beautifully healthy, consciously elevating children, that the yud, the yas sound from the ish, the man, and the has sound from the isha is actually forming one of the divine names, which you know in from Rasta culture as the jah sound. We know it as it's the end sound of the halleluka, but I cannot pronounce the word without I'll say it just quickly from the last verse in Tehillim, from Psalms, from King David, call in neshama the hallelujah, hallelujah. I mean, you recognize that sound. So I'm saying on the inverse, when there is harmony and good and pleasant as it is, and it is actually, so to speak, a taste of the future, the modern patriarch of the Hasidic movement, Baal Shem Tov, who dealt with all issues, because Torah is not a prudish, pilgrim, experience. It's an expression of life, and he instructs the male species that when you are gentle with your wife, especially the time of being one flesh with her, you should have the intent that you're actually caring for the divine presence, the Shekhinah, and the male is in the form of the emotional attributes that he's dumbing down that to produce that which a man can produce, to fertilize her. So we see that a man with a woman, if a man respects his wife, whether as one flesh physically or spiritually as one flesh, he is paying homage not only to her with her divine image, but ultimately paying homage to Shekhinah, the feminine expression of the Most High, who actually is not male or female, but manifests all these different types of mystical configurations that we as humans can relate to. As we say, the Torah speaks to the ear of human beings in order that we can internalize, not just superficialize, these divine instruction. Any take on these matters?
Truly, truly, brother. I'm listening, totally processing and seeing correlations. Yes, yes, yes. Divinely, divinely. When you are truly one union, equal yoke in the biblical, right? Equally yoked, then the soul is returned to its balance, to its so-called other half, right? Because it's still just the one soul. When the unity happens, really and truly, it is not just a union of male and female. It's a cosmic union. It's a union of God and soul,
right,
of experience and experiencer.
True.
It is the holy most celestial process. It is the macro becoming micro. It is the cosmos becoming us. This is what we are. Now, I think two generations of our inculcation, sometimes language and the experience of language mirror or cloaks rather the divine intent of expression or communication. The essence is to have our chakras aligned, to have that frequency of the divine order be present within us, that even without speaking one would know. Hence attraction is more about internal essence rather than anything else that is actually physical. What is physical but the internal impressions and the way we feel them? Because physical is feeling. Feeling is emotion. Emotions are masculine and feminine. And that is why when we go through from the most aggressive, the most subtle, we reverberate the divine context. God, divine source being our true nature, is abstracted when we are separated in our own mental capacities into the masculine consciousness, into the feminine consciousness, our derivatives thereof, our alignments thereof, pretending but not really wanting to center. Center means that the magnetic is one. The magnosphere is alive. You are magnetically aligned to your might. She is
yes.
your aligned portal. She's your aligned entity.
Yes.
It's like you're an attract towards. That's why you get attraction, that word. It is magnetic. You're on a pull towards each other. That they're coming together. It's the ethereal dance. It's the eternal dance. And that is our perpetuity in the manifest form through this emotional frequency we call the heart chakra happens. Because if we don't procreate, then we tend to lose the dynamism of this energy. Because it has to continue. It has to perpetuate. It has to be. It is eternal. It is alive. Hence, it does not cease. That is why life eternal. There will not be a time where there won't be life.
That's right.
There won't be a time when it won't be male or female. I think people hold illusions and suggest that there might be a time where we might be this or that. But they say we're going to become singular cellular organisms or entities. We are already singular cellular. The battery has to have both poles, negative and positive, in a language called electrical language, right?
Yes.
But it is the same language of behavior. It's the same language of attitude, right? In Jamaica, we say two hard ends cannot connect. Two hard ends can't meet. Meaning that is not balance, that is imbalance. The hard on the soft, the ebb on the flow. That's how we grow, that's how we go. Progenity. So godly is progenity. Progenity is godly. God made it. Yah created us this way.
True. Drum Sage, thank you. And you know, the Baal Shem Tov says also that you know, the name of something expresses its content, and your middle name, Sage, is an expression of sagacity, and I see it emanates out with you just like, you know, honey comes out of the honeycomb. So I'd like to, as we continue with our verbal ping-pong, maybe one day we'll have to get to some verbal sing-song, I'd like you to talk about the agricultural status of the Diamond of the Caribbean. And I can't mention Jamaica, I think, anymore without a vowel. When I say Jamaica, I have to say the Diamond of the Caribbean and how... And the agricultural status, what's going on agriculturally? Because I know, unfortunately, from doing a little bit of research, that other islands around Jamaica, like, say, in Haiti, Dominican Republic, where they have, unfortunately, enforced the unfortunately insidious insertion of GMO crops into those areas, that their rice and potato crops have actually been diminished. So you can talk a little about the agricultural status of the Diamond of the Caribbean, Jamaica, and update our viewers or educate our listeners, I should say, are those who are viewing with their ears, of course, what's going on over there?
Thank you, Brother Don. Well, food is indeed the staff of life. That is what we call it in Jamaica, right?
Yes.
And it's something we view with a very strong religious and spiritual eye and approach with a very fervent tongue. One of the most important growth within our agricultural practices is what we would call the organic farming. Now, I know organic as a word is basically peddled through many different societies and has different connotations, right? As in some societies, you can still use animal bones and fragments to propagate your organic plants, which to us would be totally ludicrous, right?
Right.
But if it's organic, it could be fertilized by the matter, the fecal matter of the animal.
That's right.
However, organic is one process, right? Or that sense of ital farming is one process. You asked me about the state of farming or the state of our agricultural practices in Jamaica.
Yes.
So I can approach it from two standpoints. One, the holistic. I start with the rest and I will continue in a bit. But the governmental is something we have to look at. The government of you, maybe the last administration, started a policy of making these things they call agro parks, right? Now, agro parks are a government initiative which sees probably like four or five different farmers being amalgamated under a collective in a maybe 15 to 20 acre plot that they farm together. The crops are complementary, and there is a more scientific but yet natural process to which the crops are propagated and cultivated within a certain philosophy of having the idea of our previous sort of, you know, abstracted subsistence farming or even when we had the more agricultural, or should I say industrial style farming, it was more abstracted, or should I say isolated is the word I wanted to use, where they had a kind of a slight mixed view when it was commercial, of either trying to follow American commercial farming, industrial farming, or the European farming technique. So there was a conflict there. So government policies had to come into a more holistic and cultural practice, because the at the same time the government policies were trying to reflect some kind of wholesome policy towards our agriculture, our sustainability in agriculture. There were elements in the last 5 years who wanted to introduce GMO, and I think to some degree there are some controlled versions of GMO here.
Uh-huh.
But the organic seeds movement in Jamaica, more promoted by Rastafari and more organic or natural farmers, holistic farmers, because they had more traditional techniques of maybe some traditional slash and burn or some traditional mulching and techniques that they had developed in their family farming traditions. And they were what we call the bedrock or the bread basket of Jamaican food industry. They were the ones who were really providing us with foods with good energy, not just something that was chemicalized, harmonized, and unhealthy, toxic, and unbecoming in terms of its consummation into the body, almost leading on to possession, all manner of degenerative diseases. So the government's policies become more harmonious, farming has become more unified, they're taking more scientific approaches that have been evolved through our own idea of our climate and the nature of how we are, our ecology rather. Now the organic farming, or its most modernized version, sees Jamaican farming within a greenhouse context, right? We talked about the government agroparks. Now lots of private farmers are now farming within greenhouse. Let's take tomato for instance as a crop. Tomatoes are now farmed for the most part by having a very controlled environment, that a very quarantined environment, where there are several levels of protection, where rainwater or water from the outside environment doesn't leak into the tents, doesn't come in. Everything is controlled. The environment, the soil quality, the pH balance within the soil, the alkaline, the acidic balance within the soil is tested. All things within a control process. Insects are unable to get into these tents because it is a wholly tropical greenhouse technology now being developed. A lot of our cash crops or vegetables or green leafy vegetables are being grown this way.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, tomatoes and our peppers are being grown this way. So there is a organic technique now being scientific and becoming modernized, which is kind of representing where we are. We have a highly religious culture, you know that, Dan.
Yeah,
The world is it as they see. It involves our food as well. So there are people who have always, through their natural perception of nature and their religion, wanted to keep the food as God made them, or as close to as God made them as possible.
Right.
Now we hear people talk in the industrial farming about pest resistance. And one thing that we find out in our organic farming is that pest resistance, or rather infestations of pests, increase with pesticide usage.
Yes.
The more you spray, the more pests attack your plants. There are organic ways of farming which we stagger the rows. That means that we use other crops to grow between the rows of our main crops that are actually the deterrent to the pests. These crops create the actual balance that repels the pests to your main crops. And a lot of these complementary crops, like coffee and banana, because coffee is one of our more popular crops, right?
Right.
Coffee and banana, as a way to minimize the damage of the soil and to create a balance and a nutrient offering in the soil, a lot of people in Jamaica use bananas as a crop to balance the cultivation of coffee. They plant it in between the rows.
Wow.
And that's what symbiotic way we have evolved our plant and our agricultural practices in Jamaica. And these practices spill over into the attitudes, that come from the kind of ideas we generate, you know, as religious beings. You know, we want to keep godly. We want godly food in our temples. We see that a lot of the biochemical foods that have been filled with hormones of all nature are causing degenerative diseases. And yes, people say these are not clinical statements, but the notions towards clinicians is to always defend terminology that is not familiar to us, the layman, or to the layman. And as such, then their levels of, as they said, mutations, it is within 1 point this degree of what is permissible and what is acceptable in the human temple. But we know these things alter human perception and alter your biochemistry, your cell makeup, the fiber of your very being.
That's right.
So in Jamaica, we want natural foods in the being. We want to import less, and it's just more organic. You know, Marcus Garvey said, "He who feeds you controls you."
That's right.
Right?
That's
so
right.
Science is science. We want to learn and continue in these practices.
I'd like to say as well, Thomas Jefferson, one of the, so to speak, patriarchs of the American Revolution, said, "Whoever controls the food distribution controls the people." You know, so that's.
Sure.
I'd like to just give a preface and go into a little bit. I cannot go into the expertise as you did, Trump Sage, concerning Israel, history of Israeli agricultural development, but I can give some touch on some points for people to do some research on. But before that, I'd like to go back to a letter that the Lubavitcher Rebbe, my mentor, who was a direct descendant of King David and Solomon, wrote in 1968 when he was written by someone that there was an endeavor amongst American scientists to insert cables into the earth to electrify the earth to, so to speak, supercharge, I guess from a mineral perspective or another sort of energy projection. And the Rebbe said, they can do it, but I don't understand why they would want to do it, because for thousands, I think he said something like 5,000 plus years, the Most High has been providing human beings with the earth upon which to grow produce. So why do you want to change that system which has already been perfected? You know, and he was not against experimentation, but not to the point of ruining sustainability upon the earth. So that's just one point I want to just bring out to show that you know, the person whose teachings I've been following for 32, almost 33 years, had that point. If Creator created it, as they say in America, there's a common adage, if it's not broke, don't try to fix it. So in 1867, Mark Twain, the famous American writer, made actually a trip to the Holy Land, and he found it to be a desolate country, although he commented the soil appeared to be rich enough, but hardly a tree was standing. Obviously, there still were certain pockets that I was mentioning to Jerome Sage before the program, where you have abundant water sources underground that was known since the times of Abraham, notably in Hebron, and also in Beersheba, and there are other places, there are pockets, the Jordan River, of course. But aside from that, it was basically a wasteland. However, by 2017, Mark Twain would not, in fact, recognize the Holy Land because it's blooming all over the place. Having lived there for a 27-month straight period and visiting it two times, I lived there from 1989 to 1991, then I visited there in 2007, and then in 2010, I can just tell you it's blooming and it's growing, and the technology is a sustainable technology. Now, let's go back that when the Jews started emigrating in mass in the late 19th century, going to 20th century until now, that there was a period where it was a land that was marked by malaria, arid desert, areas that were rocky, like, say, in the Galilee, which should be very familiar, the land turned Galilee, for those of the readers of the Brit Chadashah, known as one of the New Testament, that actually there was an extreme self-sacrifice on the part of the immigrants. First of all, those Jews coming from not only Eastern and Western Europe, but from Morocco, and some trickled in the late 19th century from Yemen and from Tunisia and from Egypt, they were not necessarily farmers or agricultural producers. They were more like workers in the city. There was a small exception in the early 19th century the second, what we call Chabad Rebbe, Rabbi Dov Ber Shniori, saw that the spiritual status of Jews living in that part of Russia was deteriorating tremendously because of the, as we say, in the city there's no pity, which I've heard that in more than one reggae song. So he actually, because his father was an honored citizen of the Russian government, because he backed the Tsarist government in its war against Napoleon, and of course the Tsarist government won, that lands were provided for the Jewish populations, which the Rebbe had sent out. He wanted Jews to go back to our original occupation, which to be, you know, farmers. And so, but that was a very small percentage of the people. So the people who came into the land of Israel, which then it was called Palestine, which is a whole other discussion, but the Holy Land, we'll call it anyway, they had to learn to work with uprooting the rocks, fighting against the malaria, dealing with, and in fact, as of 1920 in the Jewish population, one-third of the Jewish population in 1920 had actually been consumed, not died, but had been afflicted with malaria, which is a very intense type of disease. But 28 years later, through self-sacrifice, that they overcame the malaria problem. Now, what they were known for at the beginning until this day are the tomato crops and the potato crops. Now, these are technologies where they have shared with and produced that they abundantly supply today to even to Jordan and Egypt and Morocco. The state of Morocco, or the King of Morocco, has always been friendly to the Jewish state. Is not even 70 years old yet. Now, one of the two technologies that the Israelis had developed as they matured into this agricultural way of life is, number one, they designed something called the Israeli grain bar kakun, which basically you have your sacks of wheat, and of course if wheat is exposed to moisture and is let to sit as opposed to worked and turned into flour and then, you know, so the bread that we eat or however we use grain, it will spoil. So they came up with this something called Israeli grain bar cocoons, which they export this technology into Africa and other parts, into India. And then, as well, they have the greenhouse technology, which is something that Jerome and I have talked about before coming on the air, because I remember in the mid-1980s reading how Israel was exporting some sort of technology to Jamaica, but I don't recall being the greenhouse. But since I saw on YouTube a couple of videos that Jamaica is using greenhouse technology, that they are having success with that. Now, Israel has had organic farming for over the past 40 years. So you have a couple of matters to deal with. First of all, with the idea of organic farming, how do you get rid of the bugs? So Israel has actually worked, not making GMO, but working with basically predator bugs, namely bees, the same bee whose ancestor was used by King Solomon to decipher which flower was the real one amongst the ones that were fake, as he was tested by Queen Sheba for his wisdom. The descendants of that bee, or bees, are used as predators against the bugs, which otherwise would devastate the gentle and very brittle agricultural development in Israel. Another thing that what Israel has been, and the Mediterranean, in the area of the Jordan, they were terrorized by the Mediterranean fruit fly. So what Israel did is they took bees and they sterilized them, and the power of these sterilized bees, to even though they're sterilized and they cannot pollinate from their other whatever they would use. And again, I'm not so up on the anatomy of a bee. When they would pollinate, or where they would work with the flowers, and one of the things I saw in this lecture is that humans could miss a flower. Bees don't miss any flower. If you unleash bees on a field, they make sure every flower is attended to, whether they pollinate it or they interact with it, interface with it, and that drives away the insects. And Israel is very famous for breeding greenhouse bumblebees. Now, one other thing, so you might say, well, what about rodents? Rodents can devastate a field. So Israel came up with it. The Israelis, again, through trial and error, found something more effective than using poison, because, of course, the poison gets into the soil, and that affects the agricultural integrity of the soil. People don't realize, I've seen lectures, Jerome Sage, that when the pesticides are put down, it compromises the natural integrity of soil. So what the Israelis came out with is through trial and error, they found the barn owl. The barn owl is a natural predator, which the woman giving the lecture explained that two barn owls that are looking over a field can take care of, if there are mouse holes or rodent holes in the area where produce is being grown, just two owls can take out 2,000 to 5,000 mice in a year. Now, the only problem, the downside of having a barn owl, is that they fly away. And when they would fly to the country closest to them, to the Israeli border, is Jordan. Now, the Jordanian farmers would shoot the owls because there was a tradition amongst the Jordanians that the sight of a barn owl was in fact a harbinger of evil to come upon the people. So what the Israelis did is they invited Jordanian farmers to come to the Israeli agricultural settings and showing them how the barn owl is actually could in potential become, you know, the sign of peace is known as the dove to bring peace to the Middle East. So the Israeli agricultural and organic farmers promote the idea it won't be the dove that brings peace, it will be the barn owl, because the barn owl now is being used by Jordanian farmers, and the Israelis have shared this with the PLO farmers, and this helps to keep away the rodents in a natural balance without the use of chemical warfare on the soil. Your take on that, Jerome Sage.
Yes, Brother Dan, and listening intently and learning as well. Symbiosis in nature, that is our divine correlation. I mean, the animals, the humans, every notion, every idea I've ever heard of paradise, even in Christian terms, suggests to me there's a time on earth where man, woman, and child, and the animals will exist in harmony.
Amen.
Meaning there is a blessings. Meaning that there's a security in our food sourcing, whether we be vegetarians or grain eaters, whatever it is, or fruitarians. It suggests to us that there will be a harmony within our living environment. When humans recognize that there are other means within the natural environment to really sustain our existence, it is when we begin to look at the godly. We begin to see the highest modicum of divine truth,
yes,
which is that in the living cosmos, things are ordered. And if one would respect the order of things, one would see correlation between things. And these symbioses in our farming techniques, our farming practices, will become outpictured into our living environments, into our cultures, right? And then we can appreciate the differences in our appearances or the differences between, let's say, an ultra-Orthodox Jew or the ordinary Jew, that there is a correlation between almost religious and almost irreligious, that there isn't just that life should be only religious or it should be only irreligious or it should be without measure or without virtue, but understanding the measures, understanding the virtues, understanding the chaoses. Just like in sharing that technology with the Jordanians, I think the Israelis bridged the gap to not only maintain something that benefits them, but also advance it, carry it forward where it can be of a greater benefit. The greenhouse technology, if indeed we inherited it initially from Israel, we have done well to advance it. There is still farming of like the cash vegetable crops outside of greenhouses, and that comes with a different kind of techniques. But the essence of it is understanding nature, learning to use the flora and the fauna to be of a benefit for the continued growth and development of your human society. And it starts first with how you feed yourself, right? Because if you cannot feed yourself properly, then you will not be healthy or strong or be able to have the thoughts or the kind of energy to express yourself and to express your ideas, be able to innovate, to do what humans do. We like to see our impressions upon things, but it's upon how we are trained, how we are educated, is how we express. So if we're not truly educated in the natural laws and the cosmic laws of balance of what we put in and we take out, we put in, that if we take more than is necessary, if we put all these chemicals in the soil, that becomes crystallized and makes the soil toxic and unhealthy. It not only makes the crops that is produced in this soil unhealthy, it makes the water unhealthy,
yes.
It makes the environment. There's a
yes.
complete ecological breakdown,
yes.
propping it up with chemicals and more human aggression and more human ego and human force and insistence will not make things any better. Harmonious ways in farming practices, I support them. I think it's a movement forward. People are caring about what they put into their temples.
Yes.
Even though it's the word, not what goes in, but what comes out. But the thing is, what goes in still makes up the structure, adds to the integrity of the structure. Towards healthy, harmonious practices in our farming, in our behavior, respecting the male and the female, respecting the symbiosis of our human experience, that this is God in activity. This is Yah in divine activity. It's called human life. It's a life of the cut. It's a life of the animals, the plants, and how we human is supposed to keep the cosmic balance, the karmic law. We're not supposed to go outside that law, because when we use our force and our intelligence to disharmonize, we have lost the virtue of dominion. Dominion suggests that we are the head of its function, but the essence of its functionality is in God. How we reach God in ourselves is through our divine emotions, activities, and behaviors. So we've got to ensure that our behaviors are sacrosanct with our living environment. If we have this wholesome mind, we will have wholesome practices in our farming techniques, in our social etiquette, in our religious practices, in how we treat our women, in how we treat the offsprings, or we treat ourselves as males.
Yes.
This is indeed an organic life. Let us keep the organism in balance.
Beautiful. I just want to mention something, Drum Sage, that you mentioned something about the irreligious Jew and the Jew. From our humble perspective, is that within the Hasidic branch that I'm a part of, we don't make distinction. In fact, I don't even consider myself religious, because we've mentioned, I think, off the air, maybe we mentioned the first program we did, just as there's no word in the language of the Bible, the Torah, for race, because when we talk about the human race, it's like Bob Marley saying, it becomes a rat race. There's no word in the Hebrew Lashon HaKodesh as for religion. What we have, in fact, in this Torah portion this week, it's called, chapter 33 of Deuteronomy, at the beginning, Esh Das La'amo. There is a fiery law unto his people. You know, just as a person is carnivorous if he eats meat, vegetarian for eating vegetables, when we take of the teaching of the Most High, we are elevated. So, you know, we have a common saying, the most devout person, the time he does a sin, is certainly not any better than the person who's not so devout and is doing the right thing at that time. So there's an equalizer in creation. I just want to share that. Drum Sage, we're about 2 minutes away from the official ending of the program, but I still have extra time on the usage of my radio program. Would you be able to spend more? Because I think it's very important. Even if it's the most polemic subject matter we'll be covering probably ever when we discuss things, but I think it's very important. If you have the time, I think we can spill over and talk about the cultural and medical and health benefits of marijuana. Do you have the time, or we'll have to save it for another program?
Yes, definitely. Okay. We can go another 15 or 20, brother.
Okay.
No problem.
So let me just say out quickly, and I'd like you to have the – I'll speak for a couple minutes, and I'll just – maybe it could be the continuation of our next program with the Most High's blessing, that several years ago I was reading just – not by chance, by divine providence, a rabbi talking about the decision to try to make it illegal for Native American peoples of Turtle Island to use peyote or other hallucinogenics as part of their faith-based services. And what this rabbi commented was, if we don't stand up for the right of them to use their peyote or whatever substance they use, then someday someone's going to make a decree against us that we can't drink wine, which we drink four cups of wine during the Passover festival meal, the Paschal Lamb celebration, and also during there's a festival called Purim. So when I look at how the Rastafarian culture has used the marijuana not to be flippant and try to seduce people, but actually consider it as a sacrament, as the body is a temple, I'd like you to talk about that and how the Rastafarians have influenced world opinion and perhaps on a morphological, subconscious, or even overt level, it actually had a influence some level from in the galactic connections that are the Israelis who are basically the leading researchers on the health and medical benefits of marijuana.
Blessings again, yes, Brother Dan. And give thanks for Nafatali, Elia listening. Give thanks again for Kyle, Cindy, Kajani, and Sawadi, and for all the members of Sila Media Trail Life listening, and to all who are in listening earshot on your laptop, your tablets, your PC devices, and even your handheld. Yes, brother, marijuana, cannabis sativa, its applications in Jamaica, the advances both in terms of the holistic as well as a little bit of the medical. I couldn't start but anywhere else but within the ceremonial and the sacramental. Rastafari tradition evolved through a couple of important characters. One was called Alexander Bedwood. The other one is Marcus Garvey. The other one is Leonard P. Howell. Their philosophies, their ideas on African unity, the idea of the black man's personage and self, his true image in the earth, his place and position, the reclamation thereof, looking through the guise of the emperor to come at that time, during the time of Alexander Bedwood. He talked about the black Christ. He talked about levitation. Marcus Garvey talked about the coming of the black Christ. Look to Africa. Leonard P. Howell spoke about Haile Selassie as the black Christ, as the Messiah, as the awakened black man, the kings of kings, the lords of lords, the conquering lion of the tribe of Judah. What does this have to do with marijuana or cannabis sativa? During the early stages in the 30s, 20s, and the 40s within Jamaica, Rastaman, or those who had that perception, was supported in philosophy by our Hindu brothers who came here as indentured laborers after the end of, or after emancipation in 1838. They came here as indentured workers because the enslaved Africans were freed to do, I wouldn't say as they pleased, but they were freed and allowed to somewhat be in some, some form of work for food exchange programs. So some didn't want to be in the same house of their slave masters.
Right.
So within this movement, you had a growing unease in the psyche of people. So the black conscious, the man who wanted a sense of self that didn't pit him back beneath the feet of the slave owners, now the new plantocracy class, they chose to find company amongst the indentured because the indentured were being paid and they had their traditions of India, which Indus Kush was a familiar tone in a lot of the Africans' mind, though albeit we were here for a few hundred years now and we were a little bit battered. So cannabis sativa is a part of the sacramental usage to the god Kali, the feminine aspect of Shiva. So the Hindus use the Kali in the process, the marijuana, the cannabis, in the process of their trance and their communication with Kali, with Shiva. And they said it was also a part of the essence of Guantamo, the Guantamo Buddha. Anyhow, that tradition petered out into Rastafari, uh-huh. Early Owelites, early beardsmen, as they were called. Those with the Garvian philosophy, those with the Owelite philosophy. This kind of behavior took form in Rastafari, in the Rastafari growing off their locks like the Dravidians. This was long before some of us remember the Maasai. I remember the Batawi in Ethiopia because we had an amalgamation of Africans here. But the Hindu version of Dravidians, the Lakshad, the Sardu, the ganja, the cannabis smoking, the cannabis drinking, that helped the Rastafari, the early African-oriented re-engendering mind in the black man to smoke, to go into his cosmic self, to feel the inner ether, to see the internal makeup beyond the stratification that had come to be known as a three-fifths human. This was our door opener. Eyes open, sacred divine nature. We found Isu. We found Christ. We found the Emperor. We found ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So the sacramental use of marijuana, long before the governmental and medical application in our modern context in Jamaica, medical marijuana, it was purely sacramental. The Rasta man usually say, when I was growing up, I heard this. This was the moniker, herbs, meaning marijuana, not weed as it was called. They say weed is what you spray chemicals on, is what you try to get rid of. So marijuana cannot be weed. Marijuana has to be herbs, because the herbs, according to the Bible, are given for the healing of man. These
yeah.
are the bearing shrubs, the shrubs that are given in the service of man. So Rastaman always said, herbs is the healing of the nation. Long before biochemical abstractions in essences and in oil towards cannabinoids to tell us that these are terminology to represent what is healthy about marijuana, and THC is what's bad about marijuana, or the hallucinogenic or the prophylactic or whatever they are.
Right.
The essence of it is sacramentally, we said herbs is the healing of the nation. Now through medical sciences, they externalize minds are beginning to understand the deep energy within marijuana, that marijuana is a part of a trio of wonder plants. One is coconut, the other is soybean. The biochemical makeup of marijuana is mirrored in almost all aspects of the human physiology, biology. The only difference is with marijuana and the other two wonder plants is that coconut is in maybe 90-something percent of our biology, and soya bean probably about 90% of our biology in its many forms, work with soya bean in all of its transvergent multiple forms, right?
Right.
However, marijuana in its base chemical essence can be found in the brain matters of babies, in the deep chemical makeup of babies. It is deeply embryonic. It is a soul entity in a plant. If we are in tune with what the living cosmos is, then we understand that a spiritual entity is not just a human entity. And hence, all sacred plants and animals are spiritual entities.
That's right.
So, marijuana, when used sacramentally, removes a veil of pretext and pretense, because it's been used for truth. However, if it is being used for the social and illicit, just to get a high or to escape reality, it presents perversion. It presents abstraction.
Yes.
Right? It presents all manner of distortion. So when it is used in its true context for the wholeness of our temple, being a part of the holy anointed oils, for sacrament, for the maintenance of a godly nature, a holy character, where the divine frequencies can operate most naturally, it clears blockages. So it is being helped. It has been used to help people with eye problems. So the cannabinoids, it's been used to help those who are asthmatic and those who have epileptic shocks.
Yes.
It's been used in so many forms, in the oils and the essences, beyond the illicit, beyond the smoking, beyond the social. It has been used now in the medical to prove the ancient point to be true. Herbs is the healing of the nation.
Beautiful. You know, I thank you for that that well elucidated elucidation, which I know you can go on and on and on. And we're running a little bit short on time. I just want to mention briefly that the history, and I think Drum Sage, with the Most High's blessing, I'd like to start off our next program, and I can go more in detail to how Israelis got involved to become to the point now they're. I mean, they proclaim it, but I mean, at least in other sources outside of Israel, that Israel is one of the leading medical research countries for the use of marijuana. I've seen documentaries where it's used to help Holocaust survivors deal with post-traumatic stress syndrome. Young children, even unfortunately young children, can come down with cancer. Used to help them after their chemotherapy to help them develop a proper appetite because, you know, so much of the body is killed by the chemotherapy. They need something to restore that natural childlike appetite in order to develop. I mean, it's a great mercy upon a child that in the beginning of their sprouting out into the experience of what is human life to have it retarded by chemotherapy. And so therefore they have to go into they have to supercharge their nutrient intake, and so it's used there as well. I've seen videos where Israelis with epilepsy start to have shakes, and they inhale it, and then they're able to actually stop shaking and play guitar. And the person's saying, this has changed my life. So, I mean, there's so much more I want to go into. And also, as a matter of future discussion as well, Jerome says, hopefully for our next program, the Most High's Blessings, is the idea that it is a foodstuff. I myself can access, although I'm very outraged, that for me to buy hemp seeds, which are non-THC, that the price is so, you know, overpriced. I mean, flax seeds, is, you know, pumpkin seeds and sesame seeds are so cheap. Hemp seeds should be so accessible to human beings as a vital form of omega-3s and other type of omegas, protein. It's an antidepressant. I mean, it's a real travesty of justice. Unfortunately, we know there are corporate interests involved. But the one thing that does encourage me, Jerome Sage, is that, number one, I talked to a young rabbi who's involved in issuing kosher certification for foodstuffs. And he said, Don, I've been talking with Fortune 500 countries here in the States, and they told me, and we're talking just not the worldwide food-consuming public, if the masses of people will want organic and healthy food, and the corporations only go according to the profit line, I mean, maybe Monsanto won't like it, but there will be a switch in food production if the masses of people go about and educate themselves and becoming basically aware of the efficacy of eating naturally, organically bred food. And I think the Rastas have to get a lot of blessings for their self-sacrifice. Now the Israelis are engaged in it, and it's in pockets there are all around the world, brave human beings who are, instead of what taking out, like here in America, the big day today is to watch football games, American football games. Instead of how about the sport of empowering another human being through proper nutrition? Everyone will get the gold medal if we can educate and share just in a very peaceful and pleasant way. To eat better is a way to make the world healthier and sustainable. And we're all supposed to be human stewards. It's not just this people or that people. It's not just the Israelites or the Ethiopians or the Africans or the Jews, whatever. It's the Tibetans, it's the Syrians, it's the Chinese, it's the North Koreans, South Koreans. We're all in this together.
That is a fact, Brother Dan. That is the nature of life. We are in one living cosmos. And to do technologies, to create technologies that helps us to harmonize our future, harmonize our present, that is the way it ought to be, versus the technology that challenges us, that breaks us apart. That is a technology that basically is a benefit to us.
Yes. So listen, I'm sorry, go ahead.
And we must always strive towards this technology. So in the harmony of one life, you know, Jerome Sage Mother from Tree of Life, Kingston, Jamaica, sending shout-outs to Brother Dan, to Saya Goodman, right out there, Turtle Island, to the whole of the listening family. One love, one life, and we continue this discussion
yes.
on the health and the efficacies of marijuana, medical and otherwise.
Yes. I'd like to thank my co-host today, Jerome Sage Butler, and I want to wish him and all the inhabitants of the Diamond of the Caribbean to be blessed by the Most High Creator, along with all the other 7 billion inhabitants of the world, in a way of Ahavachad, one love, Goralachad, one destiny, Kolam for all of us, but Darchi Noam Darchi Shalom, in a pleasant and peaceful way. This is your international local cyberspace Torah activist, Torah Askan, Dunduce Goodman. We're asking Creator to help us find our way back home with Brother David Dohm, whose music will gently escort us out of today's program. Take care, everyone.
Blessings.